Okay, so come and see a dead raiser, the dead raiser. Now, we have a dilemma with this service. And if I show you the next picture, you'll hopefully see what the dilemma is. Okay, so what's that?
Titanic.
Titanic. Okay, so you all know what happened to the ship.
She sank.
Iceberg. Right. So if you were to go to a film about the Titanic, which I think that's been done, hasn't it? You kind of know the ending. Okay? So today's sermon, every bit of it, you know the ending. Okay?
Well, we're going to sink?
No, we're not going to sink. So today's sermon is based on John 11, the story of Lazarus. And you know what happened to Lazarus. Yeah? He died and risen. Yeah, Jesus raised him from the dead. So how can I do a sermon which keeps you in suspense when you know the ending? Actually, that isn't the point of the sermon. But for us to understand what it was like for, not so much for Lazarus, but for the people of the day, especially his sisters, Mary and Martha, because we know that, you know, there was a good ending and he came alive again, we pass over the impact and what it was like for the people of that day. And in fact, we kind of gloss over Jesus' reaction to the whole thing because, well, we know. You know, Jesus knew what was going to happen. What's the big issue? He raised him from the dead. Let's go on to the next chapter. That's kind of how we're going to feel. So we have to do, we, and that means you, need to do a little bit of work to put yourself in, let's say, Martha's position and think the way she thought. And also, we'll think about some of the other people as well. Okay, so we pick up the story partway through. So Jesus already knew Lazarus was ill. He's told that, and he waits. And then Lazarus dies. Okay, so now Jesus and his disciples are arriving at Bethany. So here we are. Jesus arrived at Bethany. He was told that Lazarus had already been in his grave for 4 days. So he was really dead, okay, just to be clear. There's no ambiguity here. Was he asleep or just a bit ill? He's dead, for sure. Okay, so Bethany was only a few miles down the road from Jerusalem, and many people had come to console Martha and Mary in their loss. When Martha got word that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him, but Mary stayed in the house. Okay, so imagine the scene. Try hard here to imagine. You know, think about the film you're making in your head here. Lazarus is dead. He's been buried. And there's a big consolation process going on. Lots of people have come to console Martha and Mary. And there's lots of weeping and wailing and moaning because they're very demonstrative in that part of the world. Okay? So big fuss and big grief because Lazarus, their dear brother, is dead. Well and truly dead. So now Jesus is going to pitch up. And he's the one who healed the sick, made the blind see, cast out demons. Pretty amazing stuff. In fact, very amazing stuff. And he's a good friend of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. So he turns up, and Martha comes out to him. Now, only Martha. No, Mary stays at home. Okay. Difference in character. You've probably read about that before. So Martha comes to Jesus and says to him, Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. Okay, pretty devastating kind of statement. Firstly, there's definitely expectation here because she's gone out to meet Jesus before he's even arrived. So kind of looking out for him, knowing he's coming, and then Jesus is on the edge of town, and she goes off, you know, imagine Cambridge, you know somebody's arriving at the park and ride, so you hear that they're about to arrive, so you tootle off to the park and ride to meet them before they come to your house. You're expecting them to come, and you're hopefully pleased, but there's expectation of some sort, so Martha has gone out to meet him. But, devastating phrase, if only. Now, that's a pretty heavy thing to say. If only you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. Now, interestingly, that little phrase, you know, the if only part, there's lots of of undercurrent there. Firstly, there's a very good thing, because it's pretty clear that Martha thought Jesus could have done something. So she recognizes that he has power to do something. Otherwise, it wouldn't have mattered if he'd not been there. If he had no power to do anything, then it doesn't matter where he is. So she is recognizing his power. But there's heavy, heavy disappointment here. If only. And then there's a little subcurrent of, but you weren't and you should have been. And why didn't you come? Okay, so it's not just, sorry you missed your bus and my brother died. It's actually, you should have made a bit more effort and got here. If only. And that disappointment, I would suggest, is not unique to Martha. You know, we all have areas of our lives where, why didn't God do something? And what we really mean is, why didn't he do what I want? But we don't phrase it like that. If only I hadn't lost my job, or my husband had not been ill, or whatever, you know, it's different for all of us. If only, and it's disappointment with that God didn't do something. So Martha is, you know, understandably upset her brother's died, and she's disappointed that Jesus not just didn't heal, but actually didn't come. And the notion that we're disappointed with God is, as I said, not unique to Martha. So Philip Yancey written a book, Disappointment with God, asking difficult questions, the ones that no one dares ask out loud. So I'd encourage you to have a look at that. But that's not the end of the story. Okay. So Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you'd been here, my brother wouldn't have died. Okay, heavy disappointment. But even despite that, she then says, but even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask. So she knows Jesus well enough to say that even though I'm disappointed that my brother died, even though that's true, I know God will give you whatever you ask. So she's got good faith. I mean, this is very commendable, yeah? So even though she's disappointed, she's still looking for Jesus to do something. I don't think she quite knows what, but she's looking for something. Okay, so what is she expecting? What does she think Jesus is going to do? So this is a bit of an interesting one. So Jesus says to her, aha, your brother will rise again. Okay, now is that what she wants? Well, yeah, it is, isn't it? Because he died, and if only Jesus had been there, he wouldn't have died, so he would be alive, and therefore he rises again. That's exactly what I want, isn't it? But she doesn't quite get it, because she then says, yes, says Martha, he will rise when everyone else rises at the last day. So she's technically correct, isn't she? Yes, she knows that there will be death, and you know, there will be resurrection after we've all died, and there'll be some judgment and whatever. So on the last day, everyone will rise. So she's right. So it is a faith-filled answer, but it's not quite what Jesus said or what he was going to do. So then Jesus comes out with this phrase that you probably have heard, I'm sure you've heard before. I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live even after dying. Everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never die. Now, again, this is a Titanic scenario. We've heard this phrase before, and we know what happens to Lazarus. So the impact and the weight of that statement kind of passes us by. But if you were walking down the street, no, actually, forget walking down the street, you would have seen on TV Muhammad Ali. Yeah? What was his phrase? His key phrase, I'm the greatest. Now, was he a little bit arrogant or not?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, was he a great boxer? Yes. Is he the greatest? Okay, he might be the greatest boxer, but he's not the greatest in the world at everything. So, okay, we kind of get where he's coming from, and we see it as arrogant, but that's got nothing on this phrase, I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live even if he dies. This is either the most arrogant thing to say imaginable, unless it's right, and we'll come to that, but it's a pretty outrageous thing to say, you know, especially to someone whose brother has just died. It's you know, is it insensitive? Well, it might be insensitive and arrogant, but that's what Jesus says. And the notion of, it's not just I'm the greatest, which is a phrase we'd understand, I am the resurrection. It's not I can raise people, which would be kind of bold enough, but to be the resurrection. Jesus is saying, I personify life after death and bringing back to life. Not as something I can do, but it's me. I personify that process, that quality. So that's even more outrageous. Okay, so then Jesus puts Martha right on the spot. Do you believe this? Oops. Now what does she do? She has to say yes or no. So she says yes. I've always believed you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one who has come into the world from God. That's a pretty astonishing summary. And especially as she's had that if-only experience, which is, you know, a minute before she's articulated that, if only you had done something. But even with the if only, she says it here, I have always believed. Always means even right now. Even though I'm disappointed with the if only stuff, I still believe you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one who came into the world. So that's, you know, that is a really lovely example of what our attitude to God should be when we have those if-only moments. Because Martha wanted Lazarus to be alive. She wanted Jesus to make him alive. That's, you know, if only you had done what I wanted is the subtext. And that's how we are often. You know, we say to God, we're disappointed with stuff, with him, because he doesn't do what we want or what we think he should do. But actually, Martha still believes, even with that if only. Okay, so there's a little gap in the story. Martha goes back home, and she brings Mary, or tells Mary, and then Mary comes out. When Mary arrived and saw Jesus, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. Sound familiar? Okay, so peas, pod. The two sisters both have the same experience, their brothers died, and they both use the same words, Lord, if only. And putting those together, they're saying Lord, that's not just dear sir, you know, it's Lord, I'm bowing before you and recognizing that Jesus' status is way, way above them. If only you had done something. Again, that disappointment with God, if only. Okay? But so they both do the same thing. They both say the same. Not a surprise, perhaps. So Mary is a bit more demonstrative. When Jesus sees her weeping and saw the other people wailing, so I mentioned that before, with her, what did he do? Was he mildly sympathetic? Pat them on the shoulder and say, there, it'll be fine? Because after all, he knew what he was going to do. Clearly, he definitely knew what was coming next. But no, he doesn't fob them off with platitudes saying it'll be okay. He's angry. A deep anger welled up within him, and he was deeply troubled. Okay, so Jesus gets angry about what here? Okay, so we need to think about that a little bit. So Jesus' reaction here to the death of Lazarus. He was deeply moved in his spirit, or different translation, deep anger welled up. So why was he angry? Is it because he sees Martha and Mary upset? Well, possibly. I mean, that would have some impact. He would be sensitive to that. But the key thing is, death was never part of God's plan. Okay? So here's Jesus confronting it and seeing it and what it does to people, Mary and Martha, and also what it's done to Lazarus. And, you know, the wages of sin is death. So the wages of sin is death, and death in that verse is eternal separation from God, ultimate death. Okay. So what does Jesus do? Okay. Well, he says, where have you put him? And they say to him, come and see. Now, this is a little twist on the come and see. It's not come and see Jesus. It's come and see this dead body that I'm cross about because you didn't fix this. You didn't come and intervene and save my brother. So Jesus weeps, and the people who were standing by said, see how much he loved him. But they didn't all say that. Some of them, a bit finger-waggy as well. This man healed a blind man. Couldn't he have kept Lazarus from dying? Now, if you read that carefully, is that the same as Mary and Martha, if only? It's close, but Mary and Martha wanted Jesus to come. They recognized his power. They still say, Lord, if only. And they're disappointed and hurt. But here, this is much more accusatory. You know, couldn't he have done something? It's not quite the same as the if only. It's much harsher. And we'll see what these folk did next a bit later. Okay, so Jesus gets it about the death. You know, he's sad and angry. And some people kind of understand Jesus' reaction a bit. Others clearly don't. Okay, so Jesus is still angry, gets to the tomb with a big stone, and he says, roll the stone aside. Now, we've looked at what Martha said earlier and what she was expecting, and that dialogue between her and Jesus, where Jesus says, I'm the resurrection. She still hasn't quite clocked that Jesus might do something very dramatic here, because she says, when Jesus says, roll the stone aside, Martha says, he's been dead for 4 days. The smell will be terrible. Okay, sensible. Probably true. Well, I'm sure it's true. You know, it's hot climate. Body in tomb for 4 days. It will honk. Terrible. The smell will be terrible. And then Jesus says, didn't I say you would see God's glory? Now, he doesn't say, didn't I tell you you would see your brother or I would raise your brother? He says, you will see God's glory. And the bit we didn't read before this, earlier in John 11, when Jesus waits until Lazarus has died, he explains the reason for waiting is so that God's glory will be shown. So the whole point of this story is for God's glory. And that's what he says here. You will see this. So they roll the stone away. And what does Jesus do? He helps the people understand what the whole thing is about. Because he prays. And he prays a slightly peculiar prayer. Because it's sort of a prayer to God, but it's making sure that everybody else can understand that he's praying and what he's asking. So he says, Father in heaven, thank you for hearing me. You always hear me, but I said it out loud for the sake of all the people standing here so they would believe you sent me. So Jesus is very clear that the power that is about to raise Lazarus is God's power working through him, and that he and the Father can do the same thing. So when Jesus says, come out here, next thing, Jesus says to Lazarus, come out, that's Jesus speaking on God's behalf. Okay, and that the prayer in the first bit up here is making sure that everybody knows that that's what's going on and that Jesus acts in God's power. So this demonstration that Lazarus can come out, and he does, Jesus shouts to him, come out, and he comes out all wrapped up in grave cloths. And then Jesus says, unwrap him and let him go. And that, we won't talk about that, but that's very symbolic. Unwrap him from the things that held him in death and give him freedom, let him go. So Jesus has power over death, very clear. So the bit earlier about I am the resurrection, here's a demonstration that Jesus has power over death. And in making the prayer at the first bit here, he's affirming his relationship with God and demonstrating that relationship. And remember, Jesus is offended by death, and he tells Lazarus, come out from that place of death. Be free from those things that held you. So the claim that Jesus made earlier, that I am the resurrection, well, this is a pretty good bit of evidence that that claim wasn't outrageous arrogance. It's not quite, you know, it shows he has power over death, shows he has power to do resurrection. Does it really say, I am the resurrection? Well, we'll see. There's more to follow, though. Okay, so the Jews who were there, what was their reaction? We've looked at Mary and Martha's reaction. So many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and Martha saw what Jesus did, and they believed in him. So that's great. So they saw Jesus do an astonishing miracle. Raising someone from the dead who'd been dead and rotting for 4 days is a pretty impressive. So that's great. Some of them believed, but there's a but here, and then what they did is down here. But some of them went to the Pharisees and moaned, and then the Caiaphas, the high priest, says, you know nothing at all. You do not realize it's better for you that one man die for the people than the whole nation perish. So at this point, the battle lines between Jesus and the Pharisees become really, really clear. So at this point, they're plotting to kill Jesus. So that's kind of weird, isn't it? You'd think you've just seen somebody raise a dead body, you know, back to life, and the person literally comes out of the tomb, having been dead for 4 days. What would it take to make you believe that that person has power and is from God? You'd think you can't do a miracle that's much more impressive than that. And yet some of the Pharisees, some of the people went to the Pharisees, and the Pharisees got very uppity. So how hard can it be? And that tells us that it's not what people see, the miracle that is impressive. It's what's in their hearts and what they will allow themselves to believe. You know, and okay, there's a bit of a challenge there for us that we see things God does. Do we believe like the first bunch? These guys up here, many of them saw what Jesus did and believed in him. Do we see and believe, or are we more like the muttering ones who go and scheme and plot, or at the very least, just ignore Jesus? That's a challenge for us. Okay, doesn't end there though. Now the psalm that I read you at the beginning was that little phrase, come and see what God has done. The next line talked about the people going through the parted Red Sea and walking on dry land, yeah? The Exodus from Egypt. Yeah, it's another story you know the end of. Yeah, which is good, you should know the end, that's good. Now that was the Old Testament, and the Dead Sea bit and Exodus, that's a little bit like death and resurrection. They were stuck in slavery, they escape, they go through the waters, and that's a phrase we would use to refer to death nowadays, isn't it? Through the waters of the Red Sea, and they come up the other side and they're alive. So there's a little hint of resurrection back in Exodus. Lazarus has done some resurrecting, and the Bible is absolutely jam-packed with a continuity that there are things in the Old Testament that point forward to the New Testament. And then there are bits in the New Testament that point forward to Jesus. So Exodus, Red Sea, in the bit we refer to in the psalm, is pointing forward to resurrection. Lazarus, very, very clear resurrection, is pointing forward to another resurrection that happens a few days later, and we'll get to that in a second. Okay, and then there's other stuff pointing further forward to more new life, and we'll come to that. So in the same way as with the Titanic, you kind of know what's going to happen at the end. The Bible has series of stories and events that point forward, and each is a story in its own right, but it points forward. There's a sequel. So you may have seen the film Rocky. So we had Muhammad Ali earlier, so it's a boxing theme tonight, today. No Star Wars films today, you'll be all right. Yeah. So you know what happens in the story, and you may know that there's another one. Okay? So thinking about the Exodus, that's Rocky 1. Rocky 2 is Lazarus. And we're going to move on to Rocky 3 now, okay? Because there's another part of the story. A bit dark, I'm afraid. So that's the nail in a cross. I said there was another resurrection that comes. So not long after the Lazarus story, we get Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection. So the parallels are very obvious. Lazarus is dead, 4 days in the tomb. Jesus dies, a much more brutal death, and he's in the tomb for some days, not four, but several days. So Jesus' claim to Mary, to Martha, I am the resurrection and the life. Okay, he's done pretty well by raising Lazarus, but if you really are the resurrection, and you embody that, you personify that process, then now will be a good time to demonstrate it, don't you think? So here's a little bit from Matthew, talking about the crucifixion. And just as we read this, listen out for the parallels between what happened to Jesus and the things that were in the Lazarus story. Okay, so the people passing by shouted abuse, shaking their heads in mockery. Look at you now, they yelled at him. You said you were going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. Well then, if you're the Son of God, save yourself and come down from the cross. The leading priests, teachers of the religious law, and the elders also mocked Jesus. He saved others, they scoffed, but he can't save himself. He is the King of the Jews, is he? Let him come down from the cross right now, and we will believe him. He trusted God, so let God rescue him now if he wants him. For he said, I am the Son of God. Even the revolutionaries who were crucified ridiculed him in the same way. Okay, so the mockery or the finger-pointing when Lazarus died by some of the people. Surely this man, Jesus, who opened the eyes of the blind, could have saved Lazarus. That's, you know, pretty pointed. This is even more pointed. He saved others, they scoffed, but he can't save himself. Well, actually, that's the whole point here, but that's another sermon. But they're pretty harsh, you know, doubting his ability, doubting his claims, and saying he couldn't do it. However, we know the end of the story. So a little bit later, after the resurrection, then the angel spoke to the women. Don't be afraid, he said. I know you're looking for Jesus who was crucified. He isn't here. He is risen from the dead, just as he said would happen. Come see where his body was lying. And now go quickly and tell his disciples. So the come and see, in Lazarus we have come and see where the body is. It's been there 4 days, and if only you had been here, it might be different. Come see the body. So now to the women, again the women, Mary, Martha, also women. The angel, it's not come and see the tomb, come and see the memorial. It's come and see where his body was lying, because it isn't there anymore. Because I am the resurrection has really, really done the job. Okay, he's not been resurrected, he is resurrection. So come and see where his body was lying. So he's risen. And that changes everything. Really, really everything. It shows God's heart and his plan. So remember with Lazarus, Jesus had a plan. He waited, and then he says at the end, for God to be glorified. There was a plan there, and the resurrection of Jesus is God's plan. The cross was a plan that God had. The resurrection was part of that. And there's loads and loads and loads we could say about that. But that plan that happened and was proven by the resurrection gives us hope. So the if only, well, actually, the one who has risen, he's trustworthy even in the situations where we might wonder about the if-onlys. So Martha, you know, to her credit, real credit, when asked, do you believe? She says, I have always believed you are the Messiah who came from God. And she was able to say that before she had seen the resurrection, which is, that's very commendable. We have the huge advantage that the resurrection has happened. So we know Jesus died and rose again. So when we have those, if only you had done something, we can remember, oh yeah, God who did not spare his only son, who rose again, will he not also give us all things? So when we're stuck with the if only, we need to remember he is risen. So I said to you that the Bible tells the story consistently with things pointing forward, and that continues. So we had Exodus, we had Lazarus, we had Jesus' resurrection, and in the same way as the Rocky series goes on, there's more, because the whole business of resurrection and new life doesn't end with Jesus' resurrection. So Jesus says in John 14, don't let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God and trust also in me. There is more than enough room in my Father's home. If this were not so, would I have told you that I'm going to prepare a place for you? When everything is ready, I will come and get you, so that you will always be with me where I am, and you know the way to where I'm going. So, resurrection of Christ, a new life for us, and there is a home to go to. And I'm pretty sure that although this is a snazzy picture, the home doesn't look like this. It's entitled The Celestial City, but, you know, anyway, fun picture. But more seriously, more importantly for us, is as we think forward, those if-only moments, which we have faced and we probably will, it will change, because there is a day when all the pain and the angst will stop. And yeah, all creation's waiting for it. Okay, we know we're waiting. All of that will change.